Thanks for checking out this sermon from Redemption Church in Seattle, Washington, where we're enjoying Jesus, loving people, and making disciples. If you'd like to learn more about Redemption, you can go to redemptionchurchseattle.com, or better yet, come be our guest on a Sunday here in Green Lake.
Some of you may or may not know this. In my spare time, on weekends and at night sometimes, I like to work on vintage things, old things. I love seeing things come back to life that don't have much life. Whether that's old refrigerators or record players or something, furniture, something in that vein. And you can find me sometimes working on those on the weekend or late at night down in our basement, which, by the way, looks like where all of the Saw films were probably done. But I just love doing that. I love working on things like that with my hands. But occasionally, I will get really impatient. And I will try to take shortcuts to get to where I want to go. And I will tell you this, 99% of the time, it ends up so poorly. I can't tell you how much extra time I've spent on certain projects, all because I wanted to finish it quicker, get to the end result quicker, and so I took these shortcuts, and it ended up poorly, and I'd end up having to go back and redo things and just frustrated. And I think a lot of times, especially when we are in difficult situations, for all of us, we will be, or we have been, or we are right now, difficulty, pain, struggle, doubts, we want to get through that quickly, which makes sense. We want to get by it quickly. I mean, even this idea of having things readily available quickly, that's why Amazon does so well, because we like to have things soon, and we like to get out of certain situations soon rather than later. We don't want to be in pain. This all makes sense. And in this book of Ruth so far, what we've been seeing is this tension between pain and trust and where's God and where's he working and what's he doing. And I think for some of us, especially if we're in a tough season right now, it can lead us to some different places, some places of questioning God, some places of wondering where he is, what is he doing, some places of doubt, some places of frustration, all different places it can lead us. And it can also lead us to a place where we want to, at whatever cost, move past that situation or this situation or into a different season. And today in chapter 3 of Ruth, we see a really interesting turn, if you will, in this story. But we also see the goodness and grace of God. We see him starting to move more and more in the life of Naomi and Ruth and Boaz, and God has a lot to show us through this. It's going to be up behind me. You can also turn there in the Bible, or if you have an app on your phone, we're going to be in chapter 3 of Ruth, and a little bit of background, just so we can catch up to where we are. The last chapter, chapter 2, what we saw is we saw Ruth and Naomi. They've come back to Bethlehem. They were in Moab. Naomi and her husband and her two sons went there because there was a great famine and they needed food and they wanted to survive and they wanted to live. And when they go there, tragedy strikes. It tells us right at the beginning that Naomi loses her husband, but then her sons get married, but then in a span of 10 years, both of her sons are dead. She's literally almost lost everything. And her daughters-in-law, they say, we're going to go with you back to Bethlehem. And she says, don't come with me. I have nothing that I can offer you. And one of the daughters stays. But one, Ruth, she refuses to remain in Moab. She says, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go where you're going to go. Your people are going to be my people. Your God is going to be my God. She shows such kindness to Naomi in her darkest hour, and they returned to Bethlehem. And in chapter 2, it shares with us that on some day, Ruth got up and she decided that she was going to go out into the field and she was going to work. I guess she wasn't just going to sit around in her pain any longer. She was going to go try to provide. Because as far as we know, it's not like Naomi and Ruth were really well off. They lost their husbands. They're probably just trying to survive. They're trying to make it. And so Ruth goes out and she's working in the field, and word gets back to a guy named Boaz who actually owns the field. that Ruth is out there and that she's been working incredibly hard. She hasn't taken a break. And so we see this conversation between Boaz and between Ruth. And it's this amazing conversation. And Ruth is amazed by how kind and how gracious Boaz is to her. And he says, hey, don't go to any of the fields. Don't work in any other fields. Just come here and you can work here as much as you want. And she goes back and she shares this with her mother-in-law, Naomi, and in this amazing line, especially when you read it in the Message, in chapter 2, I believe verse 20, Naomi basically says, well, it looks like God hasn't quite given up on us yet. Naomi's still hanging on to some semblance of hope. And this is where we pick up in chapter 3. So we're going to jump in, and I'll warn you ahead of time, what you're going to see, really interesting, a little bit dicey. We're not going to put just a clean silver lining over it, because we don't do that. We want to read the Bible as it stands, as it is, and see what God does in the midst of it. So here we go. Verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you or security for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Starting to get questionable here. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. All right. So what Naomi tells Ruth to do, She wants to see her provided for. She wants to see her taken care of. She doesn't want to see her in pain. What's very clear at the beginning of this chapter is that Naomi has good intentions. There's no doubt. She has really good intentions for Ruth. She wants her to still have a good life. She wants her to find redeemed hope. And she believes that Boaz is the way to that. But even though Naomi's intentions are good, her method is absolutely flawed. Some people try to read this chapter and they try to put in some form of righteousness. Oh, maybe they meant this, maybe they meant that. No, 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 no. This is a flawed plan. This is not the way that you should go about this. With everything that's shared, you really can't read it that way. That's not what the Bible's saying here. Essentially, what Naomi is telling Ruth to do is to go after Boaz has eaten a lot of food, probably had wine, he's feeling great, he's merry, all right, and he goes to bed, and she wants Ruth to show up in some pretty kind of risky clothing, looking amazing, and to seduce him in hopes that he will tell her what to do, and it will lead to a relationship and a marriage, right? I want you to see very clearly here that this is not a God-honoring plan. And I love that the Bible doesn't keep these things from us. It's very honest, it's very true, but even in the midst of that, it allows us to see God moving in such a powerful way, even when we see plans that are not God-honoring. And on a personal level, personally here, you know, for us, wanting to get out of a hard season, wanting to get out of a tough season, wanting to get out of a difficult circumstance, having doubts, wanting to move past that, those are not bad intentions. Those are not bad things. But the question is, to what length will you go to move from that to this, and even greater, at what cost? So let's continue in the story. So Naomi says, hey, Ruth, you know, make yourself look good. Go after he's passed out, lie at his feet, see what happens. Here's what Ruth says. And she replied, all that you say, I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. So they're just protecting what they've been out in the field collecting. Then she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. And at midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman was laying at his feet. Surprise! He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant." And then check out these words. These are important. "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." What we have to pick up on here, first and foremost, is Ruth's vulnerability. I mean, think about what she's gone through. She's lost her husband. She's a foreigner in a foreign land. She doesn't have wealth. She doesn't have money. She's out working in the fields. She's with her mother-in-law. She doesn't have a husband. She doesn't have children. She doesn't have much of anything. And so she's incredibly vulnerable. She's experienced the deepest pain that life has to offer, death. And she comes to Boaz completely raw, completely vulnerable, completely open. I mean, she's lost so much, but this last statement especially, it shows just how vulnerable she is when she says, "Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." The only place where you will find words like this, "spread your wings over your servant," it's in the book of Ezekiel in the Old Testament, Ezekiel 6:8. And here, God is describing Israel as a young woman that he is going to take as his wife. Here's what it says. "When I passed by you again and saw you, behold, you were at the age for love, and I spread the corner of my garment over you and covered your nakedness. I made my vow to you and entered into a covenant with you, declares the Lord, and you became mine." Ruth's plea at this moment is often our same plea. Save me. Change my life. Change what's happening. Change my circumstances. This is Ruth's plea in this moment. This is often our plea, but for Ruth, it goes much deeper. She wanted something more. She wanted something more than just temporary happiness. She wanted something more than just to escape the pain that she had been in. She's asking Boaz to covenant with her. She's asking him to be faithful to her. Because ultimately, for all of us, we want something more too. Even though you may not think it, what you want is ultimately not to just get out of a bad situation. What you want ultimately is not just good circumstances. What you want ultimately are not just your deepest desires. I know that you think you do, but you were wired for more. For more than temporary happiness, because happiness is always temporary. It's always circumstantial. It's always fleeting. That's why Larry Crabb in the book Shattered Dreams says that if you insist on happiness, you will never experience joy. And it's so true. When happiness becomes a demand, when it becomes the all-encompassing thing that we desire, that we want, it prevents us from experiencing the joy that God has wired us to live into, to experience. Ruth wants something more here. She wants something deeper. And so you have Ruth, but then also imagine Boaz in this situation. He's a single, middle-aged man with wealth. He doesn't have children. He probably had desires for marriage, for family, for all of these things. And this beautiful woman shows up that's younger than he is. She could have gone to other people. She could have pursued other relationships. And instead, she shows up to him and she says, "I'm here. I'm your servant. Be my redeemer. Be the one who saves me. Be the one who gives me hope. Be the one who shows me faithfulness." Look, in this situation, if the story ended right here and we were left to come up with our own conclusions, it could get pretty dicey. It could get kind of ugly. It could become a situation where a young woman who is vulnerable is taken advantage of, and we see that all the time. Shoot, we see that right up the street on Aurora every day. Young women being taken advantage of because they're in such a vulnerable state. It would have been so easy for Boaz to take advantage of this situation, to take advantage of Ruth, to mistreat her, to prey on her vulnerability. But he doesn't. Look at how he responds here. And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you." Meaning, I will take you in. Meaning that even though you were once married and your husband died, that won't be the end of it. You'll be redeemed. You'll be given a new husband. As long as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. What is very clear here in the way that Boaz responds and receives Ruth is that he cares about her. Absolutely. He loved that Ruth came to him. I don't think he loved the way she came to him. He was pretty freaked out. I mean, that'd be a pretty crazy situation. What's going on here? Why is there a woman at my feet? But he loves that she came to him and she wanted him to make this covenant with her. But what I love here is that he wasn't going to go the easy way. He wasn't going to take shortcuts here. He could have, but he wasn't going to, because he wanted to honor God first and foremost. He's a man of God, but also because he cared far more about what he could give Ruth than what he could take from her. And he's thinking more long-term than short-term. And a lot of times we're just thinking short-term. What can I get in the minute that's going to get me to the next point, that's going to get me through the next day? Boaz here, he's not doing this. He's thinking very long-term. And what he wants more than anything is for Ruth to be cared for, to be taken care of. And he shows that with his response. It's so clear that he could have taken advantage of Ruth, and we have to see that. He could have sent Ruth away in anger. He could have been mad that she came like that. He could have sent her away. There were other men around at this time. He could have shamed her in front of everyone. He could have destroyed her life. But he didn't. And Ruth has everything to lose here in coming so vulnerably, but instead, Boaz responds in such grace and kindness. How gracious, how kind? Here's what we can't miss. He offers to take in covenant with a foreigner who had a past, who had bruises, who had scars. Not something that would have been done. In fact, this is looked down upon, that someone from the lineage, from the family of God, would take in someone else, the Moabites, who didn't worship God, who were completely foreign. This would have been looked down on, but that is what Boaz is willing to do. In fact, that's what he wants to do, out of kindness, out of love, out of grace. She has a past. She has brokenness. She has pain. She's not coming into this relationship clean. She's got cuts. She's got bruises. And we all have a past, and we all will have scars again and again and again. Things will happen in our life that leave us wounded, that leave us in pain, that leave us with questions, that leave us with a past. And even some things that might leave us questioning the present. The losses don't just disappear. Sometimes we believe in this very false idea. Really, it's the way of Buddha, that you just suppress all the pain. Essentially, what you try to do is numb the pain. Act like it doesn't exist. Act like it's not present. That's not the way of Christianity. That's not the way of Jesus. We don't just try to suppress it. We don't act like it's not real. Some of the losses will stay with you for your entire life. I don't say that to depress you. I say that to be honest with you. Some of the unfulfilled desires will never be fulfilled in this lifetime the way that you wish they were, and those are losses, and those are real, and some of those will remain. Even when God's good, some of those will remain. Some of the pain won't ever completely go away. Some of the wounds will become scars, and God will put things back together, but there will still be some gashes, and it will look different. And we need to be honest about that. Not live in this fairy tale world where we think that we can just forget about our past, push everything away, and act like it never existed. That's not what God wants us to do. That's not what He wants you to do. But the reason that He doesn't want you to do that is because He has better for you, and because He's not going to abandon you, and because He meets you in the midst of it. He doesn't want you just to push that away. Jesus is all about redeeming and giving hope to the hopeless. Boaz, here, he points us straight to Jesus, the better, truer Redeemer, straight to Jesus. In your vulnerability, in your pain, in your doubts, in your questions, in your frustrations, others may take advantage of you. Others who are close to you may take advantage of you. Others around you may kick you down to the ground. Others may walk away when things get too difficult, when things get too tough. Others may leave you in the dust when things get hard. But Jesus, hear this, Jesus never does this. And we need to be careful not to place the experiences that we've had with other people, abandoning us, leaving us, hurting us, not doing or saying the right thing. We need to be careful not to put that on the person of Jesus, because Jesus isn't like anybody else. And to not make Jesus out as the same and say, well, Jesus, I don't know that I can trust you. I think you might leave me like this person left me. Jesus, I don't know that I can trust you. I think you might hurt me like this person hurt me years ago. Jesus is unlike anyone else, filled with complete grace, compassion, love, and goodness. Other people didn't hang on a cross for you. Other people weren't ridiculed, mocked, and murdered on your behalf. No one is like Jesus is. Jesus went through and endured things that you and I could not imagine, such pain that you and I could not imagine, physical, emotional, spiritual pain, separation from His Father. Silently, as a perfect, unblemished lamb, He went to a cruel cross. Why? To offer us hope, so that we know that no matter what comes today, no matter what comes tomorrow, no matter what comes in a year from now, we're not void of hope and we're not alone. Jesus endured so that you could have hope, but real hope, lasting hope, not just happiness, hope that produces joy in knowing what you have in the Redeemer, the one who would go to such great lengths to bring you in and put you under His wings, to covenant with you as sons and daughters, no longer lost but completely found, no longer hopeless but full of hope, no longer abandoned but completely clean. That's why Jesus came and endured and went through what He went through, so that you could have hope today and tomorrow. That's what we find in Jesus. And I want you to hear this. You are not God's experiment. He's not playing around with your life. He's not bringing things and just dropping them into your life to see, oh, I wonder what that's going to do. I wonder what they're going to do in this situation. God's not doing that. He's far too loving. He's far too caring, and He's gone to far too great of lengths to bring you into the family than to simply experiment with your life. And here's what I'll say, and I'm speaking on my own behalf too. I know sometimes it can feel like that if we're just being honest. God, where are you? What are you up to? What are you doing? Because this doesn't seem right. This doesn't seem hopeful. This seems anything but. But what we see in the truth of Scripture time and time again is that God's love and His goodness is present and it's persistent, even in our most difficult times. He knows what He's doing, and in everything that happens in your life, there is purpose. And I know sometimes that can feel painful to even hear because we want to push away from it. But everything that God brings or allows in your life, it is never void of purpose, because God loves you too much to allow purposeless things in your life. And the only thing that God wants to take from you are unhealthy pieces that keep you from trusting him. Boaz could have taken advantage of the situation. He didn't. He treats Ruth with such kindness, with such grace. He doesn't want her to be embarrassed. And so he just says, stay here the rest of the night, and then we'll get you out of here so that you're not embarrassed, so that you're not shamed, so that there's not any questions about what happened, what went down here. I don't want that for you. He's so kind. But don't miss it. There is a dilemma here in this situation. He said it. He said, I am a redeemer. I could marry you. I'm single. I could marry you. We could have a family. He says, but there is one closer than I, meaning there was another one who had rights to marry Ruth before him. And he's very clear about that. And so they have to wait. He says, we'll wait and see. I'll talk with him. We'll see if he wants to marry you. If he does, great, you'll be redeemed. God will work it out. But if he doesn't, then as long as I live, yeah, I'll be a redeemer. I'll be a redeemer. And so they wait. They wait for an unknown response. And this is our dilemma, waiting and the unknown. This is what leads us to make desperate moves. This is what leads us to take shortcuts. This is what leads us to second guess God. This is what leads us to take things into our own hands to try to manipulate situations or get to where we want to go instead of waiting on what God has. I mean, for example, there is absolutely pain for those who are single and want to be married. It's very easy to say, well, since I'm not married now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pursue some unhealthy relationships. I'm going to pursue some unhealthy outside of marriage sexual relationships just to try to find some relief, just to try to find some resolve, just to try to find a semblance of happiness in the midst of that. And so you take shortcuts. You do things that you never would have done otherwise. You take things into your own hands. Maybe you're having challenges at work, and so you take shortcuts. So you're cutthroat. So you treat people poorly. So you do anything that you need to do to get ahead. But what you end up sacrificing in the midst of that is it can come at great cost. The cost of integrity, the cost of honesty, the cost of your health, the cost of relationships, the cost of people actually seeing Jesus in you. That's a major one. There are great costs that come when we make desperate moves because we so desperately want to be out of a situation or in another situation. And we have to take note of that. We need to take note of it. It is always better, hear this, it is always better to wait on God than to look back and wish you had. Than to look back years down the line and say, man, I made a mess of this. God, I wish I had just waited on you because you knew what you were doing. Or to get into a situation that God never wanted you to be in. Or at the cost of your integrity and now it's almost impossible to get it back and nobody trusts you. You're saying, man, I wish I'd have waited on God. Man, I wish I'd have listened. I wish I'd have trusted. Because what if, this isn't for everybody, but hear this. What if the situation that you're in right now, or a situation that comes, that you try to escape from, what if God is actually using that and wants to use that to show you how he'll provide for you? To show you his kindness, to show you his love and your need for him. What if he's using that to actually grow your trust, your patience, ultimately your faith? Don't miss what God is doing or trying to show you and just look past it quickly. Sometimes we need to sit, we need to listen, we need to learn, we need to remain with him. You might be looking for peace that only surrender can provide. Constantly striving to get in a different situation because you believe that will bring you peace when really peace is only going to come with surrender, with giving up, with handing these things over, with handing your deepest heart desires over to God, saying, God, I give up. I give this to you because I can't do it. I don't want to make a mess of this. I don't know what you're doing, but I'm not going to try to force this. That God actually uses situations or seasons in our life to actually help us get to a place of peace, surrender, and joy. For some of you, God might be using this time right now to actually prepare you for what he is going to provide, what he is going to give you. And that might be your deepest heart's desires. It might be. But he might be using this time to prepare you, meaning that maybe the thing that you desire most has now become a demand and it's become an idol in front of God. And God will have no other idols. And so he could be using this time to prepare you to basically put that desire in its rightful place, in its healthy place, under God, not over him, so that you don't make a mess of what he gives you. Maybe that's marriage, maybe that's kids, maybe that's a different job. Who knows what it is? God knows your heart, and he knows your heart alone. But he knows what he's doing. And again, you're not some experiment that he's messing around with or that he's playing with. Or maybe he just has something completely different in store for you that's going to unfold and you just can't see it yet. No matter what it is, the real question here is a big one. It's will you trust him? Will you trust him? Will you wait on him, even in the unknown? Look at these last verses. So she lay at his feet until morning, but arose before one could recognize her. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. He didn't want her to be embarrassed. And he said, bring the garment that you are wearing and hold it out. So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me. He said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. I love this. Look at what Boaz does here. Boaz to Ruth. Even though she's not going to get what her heart desires right now, even though there's waiting, even though you got to see how things play out, even though Boaz knows this, he still wants to care for her between the now and then. And it's between the now and then that's really important. You may not be where you want to be right now. I get that. You may not have the things that you desire right now. It's understandable. But Jesus is not going to stop providing between the now and then. He won't. He will not rest on you. He will not go to sleep at the wheel. He will be with you in it between the now and then. And he will show his hand of goodness and kindness and grace at different moments and in different ways. Sometimes it's through people. Sometimes it's through his word. Sometimes it's through provision. But he will not leave you between the now and then. So here's what I would encourage you with. Sometimes you just need to sit in the silence. Sometimes it's healthy to reflect on the pain, on the doubts, on the struggle, on the challenges, on the unfulfilled desires. Pray through them. Talk to God. Bring them to him. Bring them to him when you're angry. Bring them to him when you're frustrated. Bring them to him when you're in tears. Bring them to him when you feel like everything's falling apart around you. But in everything that you bring, in everything that you do between the now and then, do it facing Jesus, not with your back turned on him. Not trying to go it on your own, not trying to take things into your own hand, because Jesus has made the same covenant with you that Ruth asked Boaz for, to be faithful no matter what. He knows your pain. He knows your struggle. He knows everything about you, but he promises to see you through it if you'll wait on him and let him. He's that faithful. He's that good. He's a redeemer. It's always better to wait on God than to look back and wish that you had. Even in the midst of a situation that could have gone incredibly wrong, that was not a God-honoring plan, God still is moving. He's shown up in amazing ways. There's grace. There's kindness. You can't not see him in the midst of everything that is happening here. And the same is true in your life as his sons and daughters. It's true that God's timing is his own, his plan is his own, but his promise is that his ways are always good. And that is shown most significantly on the cross and in the resurrection and in the Holy Spirit that's been given to us. There's a new story that's being written in Ruth's life, in Naomi as well, in Boaz. It's not a story without a past. It's not a story without scars, but it is a story of renewed hope. And it's a story in the hands of a faithful Redeemer.